8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
President Obama is accidentally seated next to a Taliban leader at a tense White House dinner. Bill Gates spends $3 billion on Amazon in a single night. And the condition of this public bathroom completely encapsulates why all the world's problems are unfixable. We are all participating in a mutually shared illusion called existence, and this is the...
Nah, I wasn't raised at gunpoint, and I've read too many books to distract me from the mirror when I'm happy with my looks. And I ain't got proper diction for the makings of a thug, though I grew up in the ghetto, and my sister also drugs. And though that may validate me for a spot on MTV, or get me all the airplay that my bank account would need, I was hoping to invest in a lesson that I learned, and I thought this fool would jump me just because it was my turn. I went to an open space cause I knew he wouldn't do it. Or somebody there could see him, or somebody else might prove it. And maybe in your eyes, it may seem I got punked out, cause I walked a narrow path, and then went and changed my route. But that openness exposed me to a truth I couldn't find, in the clenched fists of my ego, or the confines of my mind, in the hipness of my swagger, or the swagger in my step, or the scowl of my grimace, or the meanness of my rep. Cause you represent a truth, son, that changes by the hour. And when you open to it, vulnerability is power. And in that shifting form, you'll find a truth that doesn't change. That truth's living proof of the fact that God is strange. Talk to strangers when family fails and friends lead you astray. When Buddha laughs and Jesus weeps and turns out God is gay. His angels and Messiah's love can come in many forms. In the hallways of your projects or the fat girl in your dorm. And when you finally take the time to see what they're about. And perhaps you find them lonely or their wisdom trips you out. Maybe you'll find the cycles end, you're back where you began. But come this time around, you'll have someone to hold your hand. Who prays for you, who's there for you, who sends you love and light. Exposes you to parts of you that you once tried to fight. And come this time around, you choose to walk a different path. You'll embrace what you turned away and cry at what you laughed. Cause that's the only way we're gonna make it through this storm. Where ignorance is common sense and senselessness the norm. And flag wave high above the truth and that you never touch. And stolen goods are overpriced and freedom costs too much. And no one seems to recognize the symbols come to life. The bitten apple on the screen and Jesus had a wife. And she was his messiah like that stranger maybe yours. Who holds a subtle knife that carves the worlds like magic doors. And that's what I've been looking for, the bridge from then to now. Was watching BET like what the fuck, son, this is foul. But that square box can represent the sphere that we live in. The earth is not a flat screen, I ain't trying to fit in. But this ain't for the underground, this here's for the sun. A seed a stranger gave to me and planted on my tongue. And when I look at you, I know I'm not the only one. As a great man once said, there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Flying squirrel loves it every time. An actor sometimes feels silly pretending to be somebody else. And the head of an Occupy Wall Street protester is used to ring the opening bell of the New York Stock Exchange. Say from wherefore thou camest by these ill tidings. Speak, thou wretch.
When you start getting heckled by characters from Sesame Street, you know the evening's not going to go well. And so it was for media mogul Rupert Murdoch, giving a speech at an education forum in San Francisco. Suddenly, Elmo turns nasty.
Elmo is for equality in education, not for technological...
You were designing an American classroom to give our children the skills they need.
Occupy Sesame Street! Think for yourself!
Problem sorted, but then it's the Count's turn.
I would like to congratulate you. Seven corporations own all the media in the world. Why should they not own all the education as well?
Two protesters.
It's okay, a little controversy makes everything more interesting.
Rupert thinks he's got it handled, but yet more trouble. accusing Mr. Murdoch, who owns an educational software company, of trying to profit from public education. The Count, a.k.a. Joe Hill, explains.
Today was a very symbolic day to protest. Rupert Murdoch and Jeb Bush got together to talk about No Child Left Behind and how to use the economic crisis to further privatize education and divert more public funds into private corporate interests.
At least the sign spelled right. The protest was part of the Occupy Wall Street movement. The group's accusing bankers, financiers and politicians of greed, ruining our economies and condemning millions to poverty. Murdoch now watching over his shoulder for a green frog clutching a cream pie.
You are the 99%. We are the 99%.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever.
Round zero. So this is where the first guy got AIDS.
Peter, this is the site of the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
Oh, so Saddam Hussein did this?
No.
The Iraqi army?
No.
Some guys from Iraq?
No.
That one lady who visited Iraq that one time?
No, Peter, Iraq had nothing to do with this. It was a bunch of Saudi Arabians, Lebanese, and Egyptians financed by a Saudi Arabian guy living in Afghanistan and sheltered by Pakistanis.
So you're saying we need to invade Iran?
Want somebody to tell me, answer if you can. Want somebody to tell me, just what is a soul of a man. I'm going to ask the question, please answer if you can. Is anybody sure and can tell me, just what is a soul of a man. Well, what somebody tell me, answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me, tell what is soul of a man.
A war of words between Tehran and Washington. The United States claiming to have broken up a plot by two Iranians to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the US. Both men charged in a Manhattan courtroom, only one of them there in person. Mansour Arbabsia, arrested at JFK Airport last month, a US citizen with an Iranian passport. The Attorney General Eric Holder claiming he'd confessed to the plot, apparently spilling the beans on Iran's involvement, something Tehran has strongly denied, calling it a prefabricated scenario. The other man, Gholam Shukuri, still at large, believed to be in Iran, a member of the country's elite Quds force, part of the Revolutionary Guards. US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton vying to turn up the heat on Iran.
We will be consulting with our friends and partners around the world about how we can send a very strong message that this kind of action, which violates international norms, must be ended, and other areas where we can cooperate more closely in order to send a strong message to Iran.
U.S. Vice President Joe Biden insisting Tehran would be held accountable, talking now of trying to unite world opinion behind a possible U.S. response.
I traveled different countries. I've traveled in forest land. I found nobody could tell me just what about the soul of a man. When I want somebody tell me, if you can, I want somebody to tell me just what is the soul of a man. I saw a crowd stand talking. I just came up in time. Was teaching the lawyer, the doctor. Well, a man ain't nothing but a mind. Well, I want somebody to tell me. Answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me just what is the soul of a man. Gotta want somebody to tell me. Answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me just what is the soul of a man.
Go away and leave me alone, the message from the man convicted of the Lockerbie bombing. Abdel Basset al-Megrahi still protesting his innocence.
The head of the Lockerbie Victims Committee, Dr. Jim Swar, has visited me in jail. The governor of the jail said this is the first time that the family of victims visited a person who was convicted for this case. He told me very clearly that we are not really convinced of your conviction. The facts will become clear one day and hopefully in the near future. In a few months from now, you will see new facts that will be announced.
Waiting to die at home in Tripoli, released in August 2009 with supposedly just 3 months to live. Welcomed home as a hero, but now scrabbling around for medicine.
I've only 4 tablets and after this it will finish. It will finish in 4 days. I have an injection that I have to take on October the 4th. Me and my family and my friends are trying to bring me the medicine from outside. Why is this the way I'm treated? I didn't harm anyone. I've never harmed anyone in my life.
Facing a tougher time since the rebels entered Tripoli.
Hoshi and Turk.
My house was raided. They smashed through the door and they got in. My cars were stolen. My personal car, my wife's car and the cars of my sons were confiscated.
Hoping now to be simply left in peace.
I only have a few more days, weeks or months. I want to die in my house among my family. I wish from God that I will see my country united with no fighting or war. I hope the bloodshed will stop in Libya. I wish all the best for my country.
I read the Bible often. I try to read it right. And for as I could understand, nothing but a burning love. Gotta watch somebody tell me. Answer if you can. I want somebody tell me. Tell what is the soul of a man. When Christ had entered the temple, the people lost but amazed. Was teaching the lawyers, doctors, how to raise the man from the grave. Well, I want somebody tell me. Answer if you can. Want somebody to tell me. Tell me what is the soul of a man. Well, I want somebody tell me. Answer if you can. I want somebody tell me.
Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the Iranian president who astonished many when he reached the office of the presidency by donating all the high-valued Iranian carpets to one of the mosques in Tehran by replacing them with low-cost ordinary carpets. He observed that there was a huge extravagant lounge for receiving and welcoming VIPs, and he ordered it to be closed and asked the protocol office to arrange for an ordinary room instead, with wooden chairs. On many occasions, he joined the cleaning staff of the municipality for cleaning the streets in the area, where his home and the presidency office locates to this day. Under his authority, whenever he appoints any minister to his posts, he gets a signed document from them with many provisions, particularly highlighting that he shall remain poor and that his personal and relatives' accounts will be watched, and the day he leaves the ministry, it shall be with dignity, and therefore it is not lawful for him or his relatives to take any advantage of his office. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was born on October 28, 1956. He is the 6th and current president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. He became president on the 6th of August 2005, after winning the 2005 presidential election. Before becoming president, he was the mayor of Tehran. First of all, he declared all the wealth and property he owned, a Peugeot 504 car, model 1977, and an old small house inherited from his father 40 years ago in one of the poorest zones in Tehran. His accounts had a zero balance, and the only money that came into his account was from his salary from the university as a lecturer with an amount of $250 a month. The president still owns that same house. This is all he owns. The president of one of the world's most important countries, strategically, economically, politically, and with regard to its oil and defense. He doesn't even take his personal salary with the argument that all the wealth belongs to the nation and he is the safeguard over it. One of the things that impresses the staff at the presidency is the bag the president brings with him every day, which contains his breakfast, some sandwiches or bread with olive oil and cheese, prepared by his wife, and he eats and enjoys it with happiness. While he stopped all the deliveries of the special food that used to come in for the president. One of the other things he changed was his personal carrier, the president's aircraft, to a cargo aircraft, in order to save the spending from the public treasury, and he ordered that he will be flying with the ordinary airline in economy class. He organizes meetings every now and then with all the ministers to know their activities and efficiency, and he closed down the office of the manager of the president, and any minister can enter into his office without his permission. He also stopped the welcome ceremonies like the red carpet, the photo sessions, or any personal advertisement of any kind while visiting any place in the country. Whenever he has to stay in any of the hotels, he asks them to make sure not to give him a room with a bed, because he doesn't like to sleep on beds, but rather likes to sleep on the ground, on a simple mattress with a blanket. Now, I can think of one or two presidents and their wives that could slightly alter their way of thinking in this regard.
An Iranian terror plot, but the main suspect has been in custody since September. So why did the Department of Justice wait until now to announce this threat? Is it mere coincidence, as it comes at a time when House Republicans, as you've just heard, subpoenaed the head of the Justice Department, Attorney General Holder himself, for his marred gun-running program, Operation Fast and Furious, which, as you know, let military-grade weaponry get in the hands of Mexican drug gangs? Or is there another explanation for this curious announcement that Mr. Holder made yesterday?
Some humans ain't human. Some people ain't kind. You open up their hearts, and here's what you'll find. A few frozen pizzas, some ice cubes with hair, a broken popsicle. You don't want to go there. Some humans ain't human, though they walk like we do. They live and they breathe just to turn the old screw. They screw you when you're sleeping. They try to screw you blind. Some humans ain't human. Some people ain't kind.
Joining us by phone from Virginia is retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. Colonel Schaefer, it's always a pleasure. Welcome back to Freedom Watch.
Thank you for having me, Judge. Sorry, well, I can't be there.
As are we, but we appreciate you picking up the phone and calling us. What is your take on this alleged terror plot involving Iran? Is this the way the Iran intelligence agencies usually operate, engaging with somebody they thought were involved with Mexican drug gangs to assassinate a Saudi Arabian ambassador in a public restaurant in New York or Washington?
Well, it's a long way to get to a much easier target in other places, and no, I don't think so. And obviously, I've interrogated the Iranians. Two chapters of my book, Operation Darkheart, are dedicated to this. And that's what makes me think twice about this. The American that they're accusing here, Judge, was, true enough, he has a dual passport, Iranian-American, but frankly, my experience has been directly that these people love being here. Once they're here, they love being here. And the idea of this guy, all of a sudden, after years being a successful, by all accounts, a successful used car salesman in Texas, part of the community, I would think it would be very difficult to imagine him just all of a sudden deciding that he's going to go against everything he's done for the past, you know, for the past 15 years to do this. It does not smell correctly.
You might go to church and sit down in a pew. Those humans who ain't human are sitting right next to you. They talk about your family. They talk about your clothes when they don't know their own from their own elbows. Jealousy and stupidity don't equal harmony. Jealousy and stupidity don't equal harmony.
Is it possible that this Iranian-American is a double agent who wanted to trick the government of the United States of America into taking some action against Iran? Is it likely that the FBI concocted this whole thing? And because it was a sting, nobody was ever in danger. There was never a real plot. This guy was plotting with FBI agents who he thought were Mexican drug lords. What does Colonel Schaefer think really went down here?
I think that's part of it. I think the reason it came out now is literally this is red meat to a bunch of lions. You know, I think this is why they threw it out now at this point, not in September. Secondly, yeah, the FBI's had a record lately, and I did talk to one of my inside guys today, and he is saying that he thinks the same thing. You know why? Because he can't find any real information, and he's got a clearance. So that tells him that there's something going on that's extraordinary by the fact that he's an inside, you know, investigator, knows what's going on, and yet, and I'm going to quote here, there's nothing on this within the DOJ beyond what they've talked about publicly, which means to him there's something very wrong with it.
Look, the United States used failed and flawed intelligence to attack Iraq in 1991 and in 2003. Is there the danger that we might use something as preposterous as this plot, which was created and run and controlled by the FBI that was announced yesterday, as a basis for invading the country of Iran?
I got to tell you, I do believe the Iranians do pose a threat. However, I agree with you on this. There's no reason to believe at this point that the intel is there to justify a direct military action. So what we need to do here is look much deeper at this beyond what's been put out there. Frankly, Judge, they've got to come clean on this. They've got to actually announce the details of the investigation. And frankly, I think the real issue is it goes back to the southwest border. I mean, if these guys were going in and out, the Iranians were moving in and out of the border, southwest border, we need to look at that again, and not only from the perspective of Fast and Furious, but what else is actually going on.
Did you ever notice when you're feeling really good, there's always a pigeon that comes on your hood? Or you're feeling your freedom and the world's off your back, when that hot shot from Texas starts his own war in Iraq. Some humans ain't human. Some people ain't kind. They lie through their teeth with their head up there behind. You open up their heart, and here's what you'll find. Some humans ain't human. Some people ain't kind.
Not have that many fans at home, but around the world, Obama mania has a healthy pulse. The US president has been greeted by thousands in Africa. He sunk pints and won hearts after discovering roots in Ireland, and hardly a corner of the world is free from figurines, badges, and other artifacts some choose to label art, but none are as bizarre as this Chinese chicken shop. Beijing's UFO chicken, owned by Zhu Boli.
I think Obama has a great smile. He looks kind. I hope he can bring my small shop some good fortune, like a money god.
Fearing a potential legal battle, Zhu named his place UFO. But some locals think one fast food outlet may have a bone to pick.
He has replaced KFC's old man logo with Obama and the name with something else. He's just copying other people's ideas. Does this count as piracy?
If he is stepping on someone else's chicken toes, Zhu has a watertight explanation.
Maybe I worship Obama a bit too much. So as I drew the logo, it looked more and more like Obama. I didn't draw him intentionally.
Despite pressure from local authorities, Zhu is sticking with his not-so-finger-licking chicken sign. Go on, Zhu. Yes, you chicken.
You know, I ordered the Southern Sampler just because I couldn't make up my mind. Since, as I said, I eat there quite a bit. So you know, I wasn't sure what I was in the mood for. I said, well, you just bring me a little something. You know, it's not gourmet cuisine, but that's not why I go to Dixie Kitchen. You know, I'm not looking for some fancy presentation or, you know, extraordinarily subtle flavors. I mean, what I'm looking for is food that tastes good for a good price. So Dixie Kitchen, I think, is a good option for people. So I do have to put in a plug for their peach cobbler.
If you didn't care, what happened to me? And I didn't care for you. We would zigzag away through the bottom of pain. Occasionally glancing up through the rain, wondering which of the brothers to blame. And watching for pigs on the wing.
Meet Phoenix Jones, self-styled superhero and self-proclaimed defender of Seattle. The comic book vigilante who has ended up on the wrong side of the law after being accused of assault dramatically unmasked himself outside one of the city's courts on Thursday, revealing the man behind the mask, Benjamin Fodor.
I'm Phoenix Jones. I'm also Ben Fodor.
I also protect the city. I also am a father. I also am a brother. I'm just like everyone else.
Although prosecutors say they have not yet decided whether to file charges, Mr. Foda remained defiant, vowing that him and his Rain City superhero movement would continue to patrol the streets.
You know that I care. What happens to you? And I know that you care. For me too. So I don't feel alone on the weight of the stone. Now that I've found somewhere safe to bury my bones, and any fool knows a dog needs a home. A shelter from pigs on the wing.
It's hard to believe that this den of horrors exists in a sleepy Miami suburb. But just days ago, police busted an illegal spouse fighting ring right here in this very basement. Here, couples were forced into vicious arguments solely for the purposes of gambling. As you can see in this video pulled from the internet, spouse fighting is a cruel, barbaric spectacle that ends only when one spouse is psychologically destroyed.
Help you!
I am not a mind reader!
You knew I needed the car, David! It must have been so important for you to get your dry cleaning right then!
2-1 odds on Mr. Ward! Taking 2-1 on Mr. Ward!
Jimmy, who asked that we not use his real name, was a promoter of these brutal cage arguments.
The audience feels ripped off if you give them a 30-second argument that ends with, let's just get a divorce. They want to see the spouses really just give them some deep-rooted shit that's been simmering for years.
Deputy Sheriff Tom Erickson leads Dade County's Spouse Fighting Task Force.
And right here, what we have is a credit card bill. As you can see, several $100 have been charged to an online shoe retailer. If a fight starts to die down, the handlers will throw that in.
Sick. As seen in this video obtained exclusively by Beyond the Facts, ringleaders will go to any length to escalate the fight.
Trevor, would you tell your mom that she's behaving like a complete maniac?
Trevor's now heard you scream at a woman! Big tough guy!
Trevor, come on, baby, you'll be all right. Come on. Here you go, champ.
Sadly, the spouses authorities managed to rescue from these basement arguments are difficult to re-socialize.
What, like a cup of coffee is going to make this all better? My hero, you are just like him!
And it doesn't end with spouse fighting. Police have reported a spike in popularity in the sick sport of uptight co-worker baiting, in which an office worker is chained to a pole by her neck, just out of reach of a temp eating from a box of cereal she left in the break room.
Don't you have any respect for anyone? I am not your mother, and I will not pick up after you!
It's a sick world.
We gotta spread this stuff around! Let's put it on the internet!
It feels so awful that I'm broadcasting from the most egregiously dishonest place in the entire universe, the Upper West Side. I don't even feel like I have the right to talk, because I live on the Upper West Side. But I swear, I try to be honest, I do. I mean, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? That's what I want to know. Now, I was brought up, you know, in the hippie days, you know, and there was that song. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? And come on now, people, smile on your brother. This is a time, everybody was high, of course. I mean, this John Lennon was writing about, you know, imagine there's no money. But he was completely high on heroin all the time and had $50 million, so he didn't have to worry about imagining if there was no money. But one thing they had right, even though they may not have known why, it wasn't all sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It was a civil rights era. It was gay revolutions. It was everything that has come to fruition now, or should, or is. it started in that time, women's rights, everything. But one thing is for sure when you look at things, that it's got to be, there's got to be a world government. Now, whether we'll ever get there, it looks doubtful. I mean, when you look at something like Norway, and then you see there's global warming and every country is grabbing mineral rights from every place else, there's more wars, there's more religious murders, there's more hatred, there's more reactionaries, there are more, incredible weapons where everybody's murdering everybody. So at the same time that we're making advances in communication, the world is closer now than it's ever been. When you think of communication, mass migration, immigration, intermarriage, all kinds of things, and business, of course, which is the great leveler, mostly levels us all 6 feet under. But so the world is becoming smaller and more connected all the time, and at the same time, it seems becoming more violent, more reactionary, more full of dictatorships, more divided, more segmented, and walls are going up all over the place. So it's this bizarre circumstance where everything is becoming closer and further away, where everybody is becoming friendlier and angrier, where everybody is becoming friends and everybody's becoming enemies. You got 500 million people in the world on Facebook who are friends with everybody else. I don't know what kind of friends, but they're friending people all over the place. Meanwhile, you got other people bombing people, shooting people in the dozens and the hundreds and the thousands every single day. You got, nuclear weapons being developed. You've got people declaring war on other people. You've got insane laws being passed, even in places that are supposed to be democracies, like Israel or the United States and in Europe. They're having this gigantic reaction against all the migration and multiculturalism. Now, there's a lot more to talk about here, but I don't really have the time today for that. So what really gets me is what happened in Norway, because this is what the seed of this conversation was going to be, or rather, I should, being polite, I'm calling it a conversation. That's a euphemism. What this monologue was going to be all about. But I just don't have the time. But what happened in Norway, he didn't kill just anybody. He picked a bunch of people who are a higher functioning level probably than most Norwegians. It's true, for better or for worse, you know. They were, now I don't know what the political parties are like here. I mean, as the Democratic and Republican Party are nothing but prostitutes for rich people and full of either lunatics, idiots, or corrupt people, or opportunists. There's no real representative political parties here. I don't know how representative the Labour Party, the governing party, is in Norway, how much they truly represent. But a lot of countries in Europe have parliamentary systems that tend to be more representative of the population. And clearly, obviously, not perverted and sick and dominated by fascist religious ideas, as they are increasingly becoming in our great democratic ally, Israel, over there. If, you know, you look around the world and you see we're getting closer and closer. But meanwhile, at the same time, there's tremendous business. And business is not separated from government, is not separated from military, is not separated from mass murder anymore. Pollution, armies, business agreements, secret ops. You know, it's all, that's how things are enforced these days. And there's global warming. I mean, that's the biggest threat of all. And of course, since everybody's bickering and yelling and screaming, and of course, the great ignoramuses in this country, of which there are tens of millions, are claiming there is no such thing. So we're all frogs being boiled alive in this pot, and those of us that know this are in a kind of a rage because there's nothing much we can do about it. Of course, we're faced with idiots wherever we look. People who are religious idiots, who are economic idiots, who are political idiots, and they refuse to even acknowledge this. They're counting on God to rescue them. They're counting on some bizarre political theory developed by some Russian emigrant from the 1920s, Ayn Rand or whatever. This is what they're counting on, some crazy abstraction. But nothing is going to rescue anybody except cooperation. And I don't know if that's going to really happen. I mean, the first time it was ever tried, the record of we have in the Bible, was the Tower of Babel. And what happened was that, I don't know how it's worded in the Old Testament, but men of all the nations of the earth, apparently at that time they all spoke one language. I'm not sure what it was. It was probably French. Anyhow, at that time, about 5,000 years ago, they spoke one language. So they said, you know what? We can get together here. Why don't we? And they were cooperating. The whole world was cooperating. You know, the creations of God, if you believe in God, were all cooperating. You'd think that was the highest level that could be reached by human beings. They were cooperating. So they decided, let's build a tower and see if we can get up to heaven and see Dad, you know, who created us all. We're all the children of God. Let's go up and build a tower and go up there. And God took one look at this cooperation, which the highest level known of cooperation in history, you know, until we had the League of Nations or the UN. and they all got together to speak the same language. He says, and this is interesting in the Bible, he says, they're getting a little too close for comfort. Too close to us, he says. Think about that. Who's us? Is that the Gang of Six? Who was running things in those days? Was God and us? Was he bisexual? Anyhow, so God says, you know, all this cooperation is scaring the living crap out of me. Who do they think they are? Me? So he strikes them all speaking different languages. And, of course, they can't say past, you know, the rivet gun because they're all speaking a different language, right? And, you know, they can't say, you know, I'll haul that bucket up over here or I got to take a break or, you know, I thought this was an 8-hour day. No, I mean, no. And or you're late on your union dues. All of a sudden, everybody's speaking 56 different languages. They can't talk to each other. Everything falls apart. The tower falls down. Everybody gets killed. And God's happy again. This is apparently what makes God happy. He gets pissed off. He floods the whole earth. People are getting together and actually cooperating, which is the only thing that's going to save the world. And he knocks the whole, strikes them all speaking different languages and knocks the tower down. So God doesn't want the world to get together. That's for sure. So let's leave God out of it. Now we have the United Nations, which a whole lot of people don't take seriously and doesn't seem to have that much power because people won't grant it the power. But we have an increasing number. If you look around, we have the Eurozone, we have Euros, European Union, we have the United Nations with all these different cooperative ventures. If people are starving in Somalia, the United Nations gets it together, sends in troops, and helps organize food delivery. So, and then there's the International Criminal Court, there's Interpol, International Police. There is more and more cooperation. But all these things are sort of bad and good at the same time. There are police dictatorships everywhere now. There's an interweaving of the highest levels of business and the highest levels of dictatorial and fascist force all over the world, including this country, or maybe even especially this country, since we're the ones who invented all this stuff and have the highest level of military death-dealing capability. I don't know. I don't know. Freud, in 1938, Civilization and Its Discontents, his last book was published before he died a year later. And this is before even World War II started, or the atomic bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or the death camps had become known to everybody in their vast scope. And finally, in the end, 50 million people got killed in World War II, probably 75 million people, if you include starving civilians in various places. All of this stuff is happening. Freud didn't even see all this, and yet in Civilization and Its Discontents, he writes that looking at mankind, taking one thing with another, and he was quite a historian and had a depth and breadth of vision that few people had. He had studied history, had studied anthropology, archaeology, mythology, and he looked at the world and he kept up with the news. He sees what's going on. He says, in the end, it's a race. It's a race for human beings between what he called Thanatos and Eros. Thanatos, an urge towards death, the aura, the power of death, suicide and murder, right? And Eros, the power of love, friendship, and cooperation. And he was betting, he said, if he was going to bet, unfortunately, knowing human nature and seeing the way the world was, and this is, you understand, before everybody even understood the scope of the murder and the insanity of World War II and the bombs that went off that we dropped and the death camps. He said he was betting on, unfortunately, that the urge toward death and destruction would win over. And it sure looks that way. Clearly, the only way that the Earth, literally the Earth, and everybody on it is going to be saved from drowning and storms and murder and insanity and violence and dictatorships everywhere just mowing people down like they do and fringe maniacs killing people. The only way the Earth is going to be saved by that is to get rid of racism, to get rid of religion, to get rid of nationalism. You don't want everybody on Earth being exactly the same, do you? Or do you? Do we want to preserve the Earth and people on it? Do we want to keep human beings alive or not? Because we have, if we go on the way we are, separately, and Benjamin Franklin said, remember Benjamin Franklin, a famous phrase Benjamin Franklin said when, after he signed the Declaration of Independence, which basically was an act of treason against England, and so that everybody who signed it could hang, he said, we better all hang together, or we most assuredly will hang separately. This is the state the human race is in now. We can have our fights here internally, domestically, and people are fighting in France with each other, and people are fighting by race, by religion. There's nothing crazier or stupid or more infantilizing or murderous or hypocritical than religion. Nothing even comes near it. But then business is cynical. International corporate business is as cynical as they can get. They'll use anything, but they are the ones behind a lot of the murders and everything that are going on in the world now, and the destruction of property, killing, erasure of whole groups of citizens and people. But is there a way to really have a world government? What would that look like? Where would it be? Where would it be located? It's not going to be in New York, right? Is it going to be in Brussels? No, that's too white. Why should it be? There's more people of color than there are white people in the world. Maybe it should be, I don't know, where should it be? So you have to figure out where would the world government be located? Could there be a world army and a world police force and a true world court that everybody had to be accountable to? You think that's ever going to happen? I don't think so. I mean, the United States and some other large countries won't join these things. They won't belong to any treaty, so they can be judged, and brought to justice. People like George Bush are mass murderers. George Bush is a mass murderer. And Obama is a mass murderer. You know, he's got armies, his own personal armies, because he doesn't care about Congress anymore. He's got drones blowing people up in 65 different countries, assassinating people all over the place. I mean, every day, the President of the United States is probably responsible for about 25 assassinations. This president, Mr. Hope and Change, Mr. Smiley Face, although he's not smiling so much anymore. So basically, the world court would have, can you imagine? So there would be, how could there be a world government? What would it look like? What would it be? Where would it be? Should we all speak the same language? Should we all become the same thing? I mean, all over Europe, people are worried about, what's French anymore? What's British anymore? What's Italian? What's Norwegian now? People are saying, are we Norwegian or what are we? Are we Germans or what are we? All these laws are being passed all over, and it's all because of the Muslims, right? Muslim migration in the millions, in the tens of millions all over Europe, everywhere for the last 20, 30, 40 years. It started in Germany after World War II because the Germans had no able-bodied men virtually left to rebuild Germany. Very few. So, because of some relationship they had, a historical relationship in World War I, the Germans and the Turks were allies. And it had to do with opposing the British, and it had to do with the Ottoman Empire and the whatever. So, the Germans and the Turks had a relationship. This was the first mass Muslim migration. And then in England, you get a lot of people from Pakistan who came to England, and people from various other ex-colonies who were Muslims that come there, this is all because of colonialism. There's a kind of political and psychic karma involved here, and historical karma. Places like Italy and France and Germany and England and Spain and other places go all over the world for hundreds of years, murdering people, stealing everything that belongs to everybody else, enslaving people, occupying places, installing puppet governments, bribing everybody, corrupting whole nations, right? And lording it over everybody, and in a lot of Muslim countries, stealing their oil, corrupting their governments, having puppet governments, murdering people they didn't like, and that includes the USA. So all of a sudden, these people, when everything falls apart and the empires are destroyed and they no longer have colonial empires, there's nowhere for them to go because these people, these Europeans, have ruined, have depraved and ruined and corrupted their governments and their politics to the point where it's not even savable. And they fall back on their ancient tribal dictatorships. But there's mass poverty. But also a lot of these people are educated. But there's a gigantic amount of poverty in these countries. They were former colonial countries. A lot of them are Muslim countries. They pour into their former colonial masters' countries. And now these people are, and they say, well, these people are going to welcome them because they're modern and they're liberal and they believe in multiculturalism. All of a sudden, they don't believe in multiculturalism somewhere. There's bans against minarets on mosques in Switzerland, of all places. You can't wear a veil in France, even a veil or a headdress on the street. And laws everywhere forbidding this and forbidding that. And if you look at the way that a lot of Muslims act internationally, and I'm not just talking sadly here about fringe Muslim behavior, but if you look at the way a lot of Muslims behave internationally, especially even in their own countries, they are now the world's leading champions of intolerance, bigotry, murder, hatred and violent behavior towards women. They're the ones generally blowing themselves up and murdering everybody. Now, you can't ignore, as Norway just found out, the right-wing fundamentalist Christian fascists who are everywhere. And who are upset that now it's not their time anymore. Now there's another group of fringe nuts seeming to take over the limelight. So now they're getting their own back. They won. So this guy, you see a picture of this guy? He looks like if he was dressed up in an SS uniform, he would have fit perfectly, although that's really kind of an awful thing to say about a Norwegian, because they were very heroic against the Nazis in World War II. So, you know, they were occupied and everything. But they've never seen murder and violence like they saw only a few days ago in Norway since World War II, when the Nazis were over there shooting people. And it's an astounding thing. So what you see everywhere is reactions to multiculturalism. Walls are going up everywhere. Tribes are becoming more important. People are being assassinated because they're insulting other people's religions. Somebody publishes a cartoon which in Denmark, which ridicules the Prophet Muhammad, which was a stupid thing to do, but I suppose if you believe in free speech. Nevertheless, it was an egregiously stupid thing to do. So what kind of reaction do they get? They don't get people like not buying their newspaper. Let's have a boycott. Let's not eat grapes. No. The Muslims do what they generally do. They get whipped up, a lot of these people, by imams who are as ignorant, stupid, vicious, anti-female, and bigoted and intolerant as any crazy ultra-Orthodox rabbi or nutty fundamentalist Baptist preacher. And what they do is they blow people up and assassinate people and burn down offices and attack embassies because somebody published a cartoon in a newspaper. But this is going on all over the place. Look at the reactions in this country to Muslims. Incredibly stupid, violent, bigoted stuff. And now they're actually burning down construction equipment where they're building mosques. So the whole world is becoming more rigid, more fringe, more bigoted, more crazy all the time. And yet, at the very same time, if you stand back and look at it, and again, this is not from a kind of hippie, oh, why don't we all love each other? We can get together and smile on our brothers. It's not from that point of view or perception. It's not the origin of that. If you stand back and look just very simply and clearly at the insanity and the violence and the theft and the corruption and the perversion and destruction of nature itself, floods and sea levels rising and species disappearing, human beings will hang on to the last. It'll be human beings and cockroaches. Right? Good guys finish last. The polar bears, the seals, you know, various kinds of deer, birds, they're all completely disappearing. There's hardly any birds in any Chinese cities anymore. They're so polluted over there that there's no birds in Peking, for instance. So if you step back, as I say, and you look at the whole thing, what you see is that if we want to save ourselves, that is the human race, we're going to have to look at ourselves as the human race, not black, not white, not Chinese, not American, not tribal, not this kind of Muslim, not that kind of Muslim, not Muslim at all, not Jewish, not ultra-Orthodox Jewish, not Orthodox Jewish, not conservative Jewish, not Reform Jewish, not Jewish at all, not Baptist, not Catholic, not Greek Orthodox, not Pentecostal, not Episcopalian, not Presbyterian, not Methodist. It's all crap. It's nonsense. It's jive. It's useless, archaic junk to believe in these separate religions. It just keeps us separated while the world cooks itself to death, while everybody battles everybody else. We've got to get rid of these people, throw your robes out, throw your skull caps out, throw your mosques, to take them down brick by brick, piece of marble by piece of marble, you know, stained glass window by stained glass window, all of it. All of it gone, right? We've got to get rid of all these barriers. But then what you've got left is this urge towards power. You've got all the dictatorships, and they're in league with business. So we can try to erase nationalism. We can try to erase boundaries between countries. We can try to erase religion, please. Let's offer up a prayer to God that God gets rid of all religions and then gets rid of himself, because otherwise we're cooked. Then we have to deal with these multinational corporations, because now multinational corporations are the government of the world. You look at this stuff, it drives you crazy. Your own government is stealing the land that belongs to you. They are taking bribes from people who are doing things to kill you. You know, fracking. They want to grant rights to mine uranium inside the Grand Canyon. They're giving away all the land that belongs to all of us, and they're being corrupted while they do it. They're getting paid to do it. There's a lot of people who would like that. They'd say, well, the corporations, you know, they'll be decent. After all, what the corporations, while they're killing everybody with all the pollution, and while they're murdering people to get these minerals, and while they're making deals where they corrupt whole governments just to do it, and building pipelines and selling energy, the end product is us. If we don't consume the energy, if we don't buy this junk, if we don't play these games, if we don't watch all these TVs, if we don't drive the cars, if we don't do all the crap that they make, then the corporations fall apart. So they count on us. They can't eliminate all of us because we're the ones who buy their junk. But they've got to train us all to be good little boys and girls and consumers. They have to, you know, transfix us and hypnotize us with insane, stupid, superficial amusements on TV and little things, little games we can play. Locally, individually, we are, in fact, going to have to take things back little by little and join with each other. So basically, this is the way history works. This is the way history works. It's an old, old principle, and it's, you know, it's thesis. A certain thing happens. There's antithesis. Something opposes that. And then there's synthesis. And this is the way that human evolution works. This is the way mental and emotional evolution works. Something happens. You feel a certain way or you act a certain way. A group of people do a certain thing. A certain idea is invented or a certain point of view. Something opposes that, either emotionally, physically, intellectually, or historically. One movement opposes another movement. Capitalism shows up, and then labor, and then socialism wants to get rights for actual human beings when capital doesn't care about human beings at all and would have them all die to make products. But not all die. Just leave enough alive so that they have to buy the products that their slave labor is making. So, you know, there's thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. And then something theoretically or hopefully new and better comes out of this. But it's not always better. It's not always better. So here we are. How many people are on Earth? 7 billion people? Is there enough food for everybody? I don't know. Is there enough water for everybody? No, there isn't. Is there enough food for everybody? Clearly, there's not enough food for everybody, or else it's being distributed in a way or manipulated in a way that there's not enough food for everybody. If the world doesn't stop dividing itself constantly by religion, by race, by national boundary, principles of behavior that are passed down over generations, who cares? Toss them overboard. Because the ship is sinking. What we are is human beings. First thing we got to do, like I say always, is get rid of God. Just got to get rid of God. You got to, if you see God, shoot him. Nobody's going to arrest you because you did a really good thing. So we got to get rid of all that stuff. If I asked everybody to take a vote, do you think we're going to make it or not? What do you think? And the only way that we're going to make it, if we're going to make it at all, is, I say, to knock down all these barriers, get rid of all this mythology that separates us all the racial theories, all the intellectual theories, all of this. People are just people. We will have to finally submit, and it's a word that is intolerable to a lot of people. We will have to submit to becoming equal to other people, real equality. We will have to judge not, lest we be judged. There will have to be an actual court which is colorblind and religion blind and race blind and class blind and gender blind. Will this ever happen? I have no idea.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Good afternoon. I'm Brooke Alvarez, and once again, I'm just chatting with you, the viewer, in a relaxed setting so that you can get to know the real me, and I'll appear more human, therefore helping my ratings. So we have a really great question now off of Facebook today. Philip Vernon says, I'm a big fan. How do you maintain your impeccable appearance and amazing hair as our entire degenerate civilization is collapsing around you? Well, Philip, even though an increasing number of signs point to the fact that the end of the world is nigh, that does not mean we can just let ourselves go. Do you remember when all those birds dropped dead in Arkansas last year? Well, even though it was an obvious sign of the coming apocalypse, I still spent my normal 4.5 hours flat ironing every individual strand of hair and shellacking it into place because I'm a professional. And for those of you out there who are waiting for the end of days in a bathrobe and slippers, pull yourselves together. Put on a sharp suit, pluck your eyebrows, bleach your veneers, and take the world ending with a little bit of dignity. But since you asked, Here's a global warming beauty tip to use as civilization crumbles. Tornadoes are quite rejuvenative for the skin. If you stick your face right into one, it will slough off the dead skin cells right there and then. Leave you very fresh-faced. Okay, thanks, Philip.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.